You're listening to Radio Influence.
Let me tell you why you're here.
You have 210 stories.
What truth?
Office buildings.
We just witnessed some kind of...
You don't find a desk.
Secondary.
You don't find a chair.
Follow-up explosion on the World Trade Center.
You don't find a telephone.
Some kind of explosion. A lot of smoke come out of the top.
110 stories high. They are no longer there.
The building collapsed to dust.
To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. This is your last chance.
I would ask.
After this, there is no turning back.
Once all the facts are out,
you take the blue pill.
For your understanding.
The story ends.
And for your forgiveness.
You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want.
Media is the...
You take the red
nervous
pill.
System of a democracy.
You stay in Wonderland.
If it's not functioning well, the democracy can't function.
And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
The democracy the red can't
pill.
Function.
The red pill.
Take the red pill.
You have to let it all go.
Take the red pill.
Fear.
911truth.org.
Doubt.
WhatReallyHappened.com.
You just believe.
WTC7.net.
Free your mind.
Take the red pill.
Still to this day, probably the best intro music in the history of any podcast and broadcast. The rest of you can suck it. Welcome to the rabbit hole. How many Matrix references will we make today? What do you think? Dangerous conversation back on the internet. Scott Ledger in the Out on the Ledge studios. I am dogless. My dog is actually down the street. At my girlfriend's house. She's out of town. So I've been sleeping at her place. And my dog and her dog absolutely love each other. So she's in doggy heaven right now. She can go in the pool. And so there'll be no doggy oral tonight. Sorry. I know a lot of you guys look forward to that. I hear it on Facebook. Hey, man, I really loved the show where your dog was licking her own twat for 20 minutes. Even my brother, Paul, mentioned it when I talked to him on the phone about a month ago. Hey, yeah, that was funny when GT was, And as many will agree, face it, folks, if you could, you would. You got to admit it. I still think the world's pot, what are we, at 7.5 billion? I think we'd be at about 3 billion. If I could reach my own dick and women could reach their own cooter and we could pleasure ourselves, it'd be a lot fewer babies on the planet. So I've gone with the dog oral sex opening for the show. I love my podcast. I miss it when I'm not doing it live. So what's going on? Oh, yeah. The ridiculousness of, I don't even want to call it an election cycle, because that's that's an insult to election cycles. And we'll probably scroll down the Twitter timeline here and I really do not like talking about the surface level politic on our planet. But how can you not mention what the DNC did to Bernie Sanders? How can you not mention more WikiLeaks about, yeah, Hillary starting shit in Syria and arming the boogeyman? How can you not laugh at Donald fucking Trump? Somebody shut that baby up. Oh, can you imagine if he has handlers, you know, like the people that are like off stage just a little bit and they have their speech all vetted and they go, here's your speech, Mr. Trump. Yeah, fuck that shit. I still think he doesn't want it. I still think he's kind of like a COINTELPRO to get Hillary escorted into the position of president. If he does want it and he wins, oh my fucking God. Seriously. I mean, it is idiocracy. Maybe that's what they've done. They went to the Mike Judge movie and said, you know what? We're going to eventually have the United States of America, a sovereign, powerful country, turn to shit. And here's how we're going to do it. And yeah, I know Congress is responsible for most of what happens, or should I say doesn't happen, in our country. And I realize that at a lot of levels, the presidency is just a, it is really a figurative position, but it's not. Not with presidential decrees and executive orders. It's two-thirds of a king, or maybe half a king now. So to sit there and say the president doesn't have any power is a lie, and to sit there and worry about the president having too much power is, of course, something you shouldn't worry about. But let's face it, our country's been owned by corporatocracy for a long time now. They dictate. The big banks starts at the top of the big banks, down to the corporate level, down all the way down to what we call our leaders. And then to us, the pawns, the people that do all the work, all the worrying, all the suffering, the peons. So, yeah, I guess, you know, I don't know. I kind of don't want to talk about that stuff, but I kind of will a little bit throughout the show tonight. But I haven't really, you know, as much as I do doing serious topics, and we do Carlin's Corner, and we'll play some unsigned bands and all that stuff. I really haven't informed you guys on what's going on the terrestrial side of my life. As I get simply more hours over there at Beasley Media. I just got off the air filling in, doing middays today. I'll be running board over at another station tomorrow. And as much as I thought getting back into music radio wasn't what I wanted, I have to admit I'm having fun. I really am. I'm having a great time doing it. I think when you're bored with anything, I had done music radio for 24 straight years, from 1985 to 2005. In the April of 2005, they blew up the classic rock station. That's an expression, by the way. And they went country. And anybody knows me knows that if I get within 50 foot of any country artist or country song, that I break out in hives, my throat swells up, I can't breathe. So it's just not a good thing. So that's when I started thinking about, well, I want to get into talk radio. And you know, suddenly, and I just saw Jeff Ryan, who runs the Buccaneer Radio Network. I just saw him Monday. I went out to Monday morning to watch the Buccaneers practice. And we were talking about how, you know, he picked me out. Basically, I was doing afternoons at Thunder, and they wanted to do a tie-in since Thunder carried the Buccaneer broadcast. They wanted one of the air personalities at the radio station to kind of intermingle and do a player show. And he came to me and he goes, hey, this is Rondé Barber. And I'm like, well, I know who the guy is. 5 minutes later, I'm sitting down the hallway at a sports talk station. And there's my baptism into doing talk radio, technically. Then they blow up Thunder. Now I'm without a gig. So Jeff comes to me and goes, why don't you be my game day host? And I'm like, oh, man, that's a lot to bite off. You know, in other words, where you think you can do it, but it's such a brand new skill set that you're saying to yourself, I don't know. I honestly don't know if I can do this. And I, you know, we were talking about this. We were joking about this. The Bucks used to practice in Orlando out at the Disney complex. And it was Wednesday, and I was supposed to be on the air for their first game preseason Friday night. And I was having panic attacks. I couldn't sleep. I woke up, my girlfriend at the time, Tanya, was like, are you okay? And I was like, all sweaty. I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I can do this. So I called Jeff and he goes, listen, just drive out here. So I got my car, drove to Orlando, you know, walked out there and met him. He showed me the log. You know, that's the, I know, oh, you perverts. He didn't show me his log. He showed me the log. And that is basically how the broadcast breaks down. And, you know, you talk for 10 minutes here, and then you go to a commercial break, and, you know, there's an interview here, and then we go to, you know, TJ out in the field, and we get the traffic report, and yeah, and the whole thing. And he's like, listen, I know it seems like a lot, but I know you can do this. Here's just a small piece. Just concentrate on that 10-minute open. You know, have your prep ready. Know what you want to talk about. Don't worry about doing 3 hours of it, okay? You're going to, at the end of the day, be on the air for 7 straight hours. It's a lot to do, but it's, if you think about the entire thing, you're going to freak yourself out, and you're never going to do it. 2 days later, I'm over there at, wait a minute. I'm going to have their music ready. There we go. 2 days later, I'm over at the Death Star in Gandy Boulevard. And I'm doing Buccaneers football. And let me tell you about it. You want to talk about adrenaline? Seriously, you want to talk about adrenaline? You know, oh, yeah, you know, hey, here's Molly Hatchet, blah, 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 you know. Oh, here's Aerosmith, you know. I'm talking for 28 seconds here. You know, I did band interviews. I interviewed bands. It wasn't that difficult to interview a band. Four drunk guys sit in a studio with you, and they do most of the talking. But I had to turn the mic on and be the content. And I freaked myself out. I really did. I really did. And next thing you know, I'm on the air. Jack Harris, Jack Harris talks like this, talks like a baseball announcer. Hey, Ledge, how's it going? It's Jack. Two strikes to the batter. Maybe I should do part of the podcast with my baseball announcer voice. Ledge, the wily veteran in Dangerous Conversation coming up next. That's just a bit inside. So Jack Harris sits down with me, and basically he was kind of the guy I'd go to. So Jack, you know, what do you think about the wide receivers this year? And, you know, blah, 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 back to me. So 2 weeks after that, I literally thanked Jack. I said, you know, I got this now. I can handle it on my own. Just like it really is about no matter what you do for a living, no matter what your passions are, the moment you take that leap and go do more and you go to do more, you're going to be intimidated. You're going to be nervous. You're going to have anxiety. But it doesn't mean you can't do it. And then once the confidence grows, bam. If you're the best spot welder on the planet, boom. If you're a great ER nurse, bam. If you're one of the best truck drivers on the and safest record, you know, and suddenly they go, oh, yeah, you're going to be hauling stuff in Denver in the middle of winter. You're going to be going up and down icy roads. And you're like, I got this. I got this. I know how to handle my truck. Well, it's the same way for somebody like me. So I was talking to Jeff, and he was like, you know, you're back in music radio. You sound great. And I was like, you know, thanks, you know. He goes, you know, you're a pro. You can adapt. So here I am back in music radio. It started in December. I've had some conversations that I'm not really privy to talk about yet, but I will say there could be a bigger role for me there. We'll worry about that bridge when we come to it. I'm not worried about it right now. And many people have asked me, you know, are you still going to do, you know, if you get back into radio full time, music radio, are you still going to do Dangerous Conversation? I'm like, fuck yeah. This is like my left arm. This is my baby, this podcast. I don't care if I have to do it, you know, a minimum. It's going to be a minimum of once a week, which it is right now. And there's other things I'd like to do with it, including taking it mobile, which I'm working on a little at a time. Basically, it's saving money and transferring what is a permanent studio into and developing it into a portable studio. So I can just take all the gear. It's all, you know, whatever it's going to be. It can be both. Obviously, you can sit here on a desk and do nothing, or it can sit in the back of my truck and I can come to you with Dangerous Conversation backstage live from a Ribfest festival or something, just to change it up a bit. So I mean that transition there. So, yeah, I'm always going to do this. I don't know. A lot of people think that's just because I'm, you know, there's a paycheck and some hours that I would abandon what I've grown from scratch. I mean, literally, I remember that first night, Ferris in the IO studio. It developed. We started booking guests. We built a crew. There was a chemistry. We had a blast. Some of the best radio I've ever done in my life. And, you know, then I do the Kickstarter. I get this gear for this studio. And there's no way I'm going to stop doing this. There might be a couple of weeks that I had to miss. There was a couple best ofs that we ran here at Radio Influence. But the thing is, since I'm so new to the Radio Influence crowd and, you know, where we are on iTunes and where we are on Stitcher, if people are just discovering the show, that's brand new material. It might be time stamped, it might be dated, but me, the show, the content, what we do, how we do it, is brand new to them. So I have no problems. And I did. I go, hey, man, so and so's on vacation. Can you fill in all week? And I'm like, man, yes, of course. And I've been doing that pretty steadily. In fact, I'm filling in for someone else on vacation in the week of the 15th. And I'm also going to run board tomorrow. And I got text this morning about filling in for somebody. So I'm extremely stoked about being able to do that. I'm having a blast. Beasley Media has a different feel to it. It's not like the Evil Empire. Wait a minute. Come on, man.
Be ready.
It's not like iFart or Clear Channel or whatever they call themselves this week. It's got a different feel to it. It's not completely old school, because that'll never happen. That'll never happen. That's not going to happen. The days where my program director would come in and throw a CD at me and go, play two or three tracks. I don't know. You pick them. Those days are over. There's too many consultants, too many programmers. Sometimes there's too many cooks in the kitchen. You know what I'm talking about when it comes to that. So it's never going to be what it was completely, but Beasley Media is really doing a great job of remembering why radio is powerful, why people like me, in a music format, basically I always describe myself as the songs are the bricks, but we are the mortar that holds that shit up. And that's really what Beasley understands. So as, I hate this phrase. I'm going to use it anyways. So moving forward, are you tired of that phrase like I am? Is every fucker broadcaster everywhere going to say, as we move forward? Well, what are you going to do? Move fucking backwards? As we back up into time. So, going into the future, I'm having a good time doing music radio, yes. But there's no freedom like the podcast. There's no program director telling me you can't talk about these three topics. I'm sorry, there are advertisers. You can't fucking slam Big Pharma, Ledge. We've got boner meds on the radio station. Okay, I get it, okay. That's where I have to shut up about that. But today, I get to play Doug Stanhope in Carlin's Corner, ripping Big Pharma a new ass. That's the beauty of the podcast. Let me talk about that briefly. I was thinking about this driving home today, too. There are so many talented people. If someone asked me to be on their podcast, this evening. And it's just a small little Facebook Live thing he does, but he grew up listening to me. Let me encourage you, if you want to start doing this, it's not easy to do. It's not. It sounds easy. When people are good at it and they flow very easily, it sounds that easy. It's not. Trust me, it's not. Best thing to do is get two or three guys in a room or whoever, have a few drinks. Okay? Speaking of which. Have a few and just have a conversation like you would if you're sitting around the living room. Record it. Put it up on a podcast. Facebook or Twitter or whatever. I want to encourage everybody to do it. The more voices we have, the more opinions we have, the more talent that is out there, more of that cream's going to rise to the top, and we are going to, and I'm absolutely serious when I say this, we are going to change the way the world gets its information. We are already doing that. We, meaning me and everybody else that's doing it. With me, it started with that intro, the one you hear at the beginning of the show. That was 2004. It didn't go over well. You've heard the story. I've told it many times. The reason I play that intro is because that's where my life not only changed for me on Christ on so many levels. My spiritual level was challenged. My professional level, just my conscience of, am I going to be able to speak out on publicly owned airwaves? The whole story. You've heard me tell it many times. Well, guess what? Here we are 12 years later, and millions of people are involved on Twitter, on Facebook, on whatever their medium, talking about things that people should be passionate about. Where are we going to get our new energy reserves from? Where are we going to get our new medicines from? This is why I've always had passion about that, because it's not just cool topics to talk about. It affects all of us. If you have wind and tidal and geothermal and algae biofuels and hemp fuels and you have, who knows, maybe big Tesla generators someday, there's going to be that trickle down I always say it, abundant energy is abundant life. And if you have abundant energy around you, life will be abundant for the many, not just the few. So I want to encourage you to do a podcast. I want to, do 10 minutes at a time. You can stop it, hit record again. These digital editors, a fifth grader could edit audio nowadays. It's so easy to do. You don't have to be a rocket surgeon. So let me encourage you to do that. And as far as this show is concerned, yes. I'm having a great time. Radio Influence is one of the best platforms that I've been involved with. They have a lot of great shows. I mean, you know, baseball just had their big trade deadline the other day. And a former broadcaster and a former player slash manager sit down and talk about it. I mean, these are pros doing this stuff. Nancy Alexander, who's been in this market forever, is doing that hot soccer mom talk. It's a great show called LOL. Kevin and the crew doing wrestling or MMA and Jason Floyd doing that stuff. There's a lot of people that have come from some sort of professional terrestrial side or television or broadcast school, and they're doing it. And that's the future. This is the future. The podcast is the future. One of my former bosses, when I worked over at Cox Radio, his name is Shark, Michael Sharkey. He consults radio personalities, but he's also a podcast consultant. Shark Media, I think it's called, Shark Media. And he just went up to Chicago for a big conclave of nothing but podcasters. No terrestrial people. I'm sure 50% of the people in that audience were terrestrial people, but that's how big it's getting. They're having weekend conventions. That's how the power of media is. That is the beauty of it. You don't have to agree with some redneck who's way over on the right or someone who thinks everything should be free way over on the left. You don't have to agree with these people, but God bless their right to speak their fucking mind. That's what matters. And that's why I would encourage anybody who's even toying with the idea of doing one, do it. If you have 100 listeners and you never get to 200, but they're passionate, you want to do a show about motocross riding, or you want to do a show about weightlifting and training, or you want to, I don't care, do it. Because you're going to be fun. It's going to be fun to do. It's not always easy, like I said, but do it. Because the more that's out there, the more selection, the more choice, then the fewer. I'm going to hit the movie with the sound down. I'll get to that in a second. Then the better off we're all going to be. Seriously. Because we've seen what consolidation has done to television news. It's a catastrophe at this point. It's horrible. And it's horrible, and they know they're assholes. And it's so much more about what they're not telling you now. It's not even about whether they lean left or lean right or slant. You know, they're anti-Bernie or anti-Trump or anti-Clinton or anti-Gary Johnson or anti-Jill Stein. I get that. But what it's not, what is the worst part of it, is what they're not telling you, is what they're ignoring, like the Trans-Pacific Partnership that's real close. That means see you later, more jobs in this country. Why don't we just melt the fucking borders down all over the... Why even have countries anymore? Now, I know that's kind of a new agey, new world order thing, and it sounds all bubbly and beautiful, but guess what? Wait a minute. I love this music. Movie with the sound down? Last Mohegans. One of my favorite flicks. Just a great soundtrack. Opens with that powerful music, and then bam! Now, it's supposed to be the Adirondacks, but it's the Smoky Mountains, and the camera just pans. I always get goosebumps watching this. Just, man, what a great movie. If you haven't seen it, that's the movie with the sound down that's playing to my right here at Ledge Studios. So, yeah, do your own thing, man. Please do your own thing. Okay? Because what they're not telling you is what your job is to go Google something, go to 10 different search engines. Don't be afraid. And please listen to a bunch of different podcasts. That's the whole idea. That's what I watch NHK. I watch Al Jazeera. I watch RT America. I watch the BBC. I watch lots of different things. And if you get it and it becomes a conglomerate, wrong word, coagulate. Still wrong word. Oh, that'll come to me in about 10 minutes. You add them all together, and what happens? You get a good, rounded idea on any topic. That is the beauty of having the internet. And I don't know. They're going to try to limit what you can see and what you watch. But I've always said, the moment, people go, when do you think, they always ask me, like, do you think we're going to have a revolution? And I'm like, yeah, the moment they take away your internet. Everything else you don't give a fuck about. You don't pay attention. You don't care. The moment they start to take away your internet, you'll be marching in the streets of Washington with a pitchfork and a torch. I can guarantee it. Where's my porn, motherfucker? It'll happen. You know it will. Because they'll get so tired of, look what's happened to Hillary. Look what WikiLeaks is doing to this, the next puppet in line for the oligarchs. She's literally a neocon war hawk in sheep's clothing or $12,000 Dr. Evil dresses. I don't know. I can't figure out which. But you know what? You know what? She's the next in line. And look at WikiLeaks has done to her. Look what the DNC did to Bernie Sanders. They're supposed to be neutral. The Democratic National Committee is, we have two people running. Mr. Bernie Sanders, Mrs. Clinton. And, you know, it's like, you know, you put them in the ring. Okay, you guys go at it. And may the best person win. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, no way. Schultz gets hired to be the DNC chair by Clinton, who steps down? Clinton's new VP. She's like, you know what? If you step down from the DNC, we're going to put Debbie in there. She's going to ensure that I win the nomination. And when I win the nomination, I'm going to make you my vice president. And that's exactly what happened. So WikiLeaks goes, yeah, email leaks. And the mainstream media ignores it. They talk about it a little bit, but they realize that they'd be derailing the puppet they're supposed to prop up if they actually told you the truth about shit. I posted a meme the other day. The revolution's going to be hackers. It's not going to be on your TV. It's not going to come from your news organizations. Now, more leaks. This time around, how she started Syria. That's been planned all along. Just Google PNAC, PNAC. I should probably get, you know what? I'm just bringing it up. I've played this audio so many times, but it is the type of audio that when you play it and people go, maybe he's just a disgruntled general. No, this isn't a disgruntled general. This is a guy who actually knew what was going to go on a couple of days after 9/11. Everything that's happened since 9/11, which is 15 years, coming up, 15-year anniversary next month, everything that's happened in a two-minute speech in a memo, here we go.
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon, and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the joint staff who had used to work for me, and one of the generals called me, and he said, sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second. I said, well, you're too busy. He said, no. He says, we've made the decision we're going to war with Iraq. This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, okay, I'm going to
pause that. The 20th of September. Okay, right around, give or take. So we'll say 10 days after 9/11. They have decided, when he reads these countries off, this is what PNAC had planned in 99. When they got together and wrote their manifesto, the Project for the New American Century, PNAC, Rebuilding America's Defenses. What was their plan? Their plan was essentially, the bottom line, was to take over the Middle East, create chaos, because when you have chaos, no one's in charge, everyone's fighting, there's just panic everywhere, destruction everywhere, and you can go in, you can take their oil, their gas, their minerals, take it all, or get it real cheap, install a puppet, and that was the plan. Listen to him read this memo, or reference it.
Why?
Why are we going into Iraq?
I don't know. He said, I guess they don't know what else to do. So I said, well, did they find...
They know exactly what they were doing. They make it sound like the Bush administration was incompetent. No way. No, they were following the game. It was like a quarterback going, okay, here's the next 12 plays. 49ers used to do that. They used to rehearse the first 20 plays they'd play in a game during practice that week. And that's exactly what PNAC is. It is, if you go and read the PNAC document, and when they say they need a new Pearl Harbor for America to be okay with it, remember that came out before 9/11, this document. And they needed a new Pearl Harbor. Always remember that. Always remember that. And listen to the plan.
Find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda. He said, no. He says, there's nothing new that way. They've just made the decision to go to war with Iraq. He said, I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments. And he said, I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail. So I came back to see him a few weeks later.
Okay, so a few weeks later would be 14 more days. Add that to 10, you got 24 days. So almost a month after 9/11.
And by that time, we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, are we still going to war with Iraq? And he said, oh, it's worse than that.
You ready to find out what the first 20 plays you'll practice as a PNAC quarterback?
He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said,
Rumsfeld.
This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years.
Now, they were a little bit gung-ho in their five-year prediction, were they not?
Think about it. Hang on a second.
I got one of these little soft coolers. Hang on a second. When I started doing this show, I used to say this is for the troops, and it wasn't about gung-ho, yellow ribbon shit. It was like, let's end these wars, let's get these people home, let's help them with their PTSD. And nothing's changed. Nothing's changed, except the fact that some of us still care about those people. Not only that, the people in those countries. Listen to the country lineup. Here it goes.
Starting with Iraq, and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran. The truth is about the Middle East is, had there been no oil there, it would be like Africa. Nobody is threatening to intervene in Africa. The problem is the opposite. We keep asking for people to intervene and stop it.
Libya, done. Libya wanted their own currency, remember, the dinar, which would have been a gold-backed currency and oil-backed. Remember, our currency isn't backed by anything. It's fiat currency. That would have been the African dollar, if you will. All the countries in Africa would have had their own currency, and it would have been backed by gold and oil. And that's what Gaddafi, he sat at the UN and talked to the African nations, and two different times he pitched it, and then the second time he pitched it, he was dead about 6 months later. And we blew up him and his whole fucking country. Syria just happens to be sitting there right in the way of all the pipelines that want to go from Iraq and Afghanistan, all of them that want to, because right now it goes down the Straits of Hormuz. They want those pipelines to go to the Med, to the Mediterranean. And Assad's going, well, you're going to come in my country, you're going to pay the price. Not to mention Syria does have oil and natural gas, too. So what do? We blew them up, too. All of this was planned in the late 90s because Russia had crumbled and we didn't have an enemy anymore and we could just go stomping on anybody we wanted to. And we have. And it's created chaos just like they wanted to. And let's not pretend that there hasn't been billions and billions and billions of dollars flowing. Massive amounts. As a matter of fact, I should probably get that ready. I know it's on my timeline. So this whole idea that, people talk about all the refugees. I'm like, you don't think that's not planned? You want to destabilize Europe? Oh, just let about 10 million Muslims flow in there. And I don't mean that in some Muslimophobia, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's going to directly... it affects everything from energy usage to the food supplies to the jobs available. If you want to create chaos, create war. They are interconnected and always will be interconnected. In fact, I think one feeds the other, do they not? So anybody that says, Bush was just misguided and they didn't know what they were doing, they knew exactly what they were doing. He just played the part of the buffoon. He was good at it. Maybe he wasn't acting. But think about that. Do yourself, just sit back for a second and go, you know what? What if all this was planned? and the people, the so-called leaders. Do you think Barack Hussein Obama has stopped any wars? He's been responsible for Libya. He's been responsible for Syria. He's just the next puppet in line. People, nothing in politics happens by accident. Nothing. Ever. Ever. And when it does happen by accident, there was a guy at the DNC who was going to leak some information to the FBI. Poof, two in the back. He's dead. What's his name? His name is, as I scroll, I know he's in there somewhere. I'm scrolling. Talk amongst yourselves. Everybody's always posting a bunch of bans on my page. His name is Seth Rich, or was Seth Rich. And Seth was probably, at least that's what most people are saying, was going to meet with the FBI about how the DNC handled the Bernie Sanders affairs. He's dead now. So everything that happens in politics is meant to happen until you get somebody with a conscience. And that's what they do. They speak out. And they usually end up suicided. That's what Rob Revere used to say. Oh, yeah, he'll just be suicided. And I always wondered how these people who commit suicide can shoot themselves in the back of the head twice. That takes talent. Seriously, you got to be quite the quick. What do they call that? Trick shot. You can put two bullets in the back of your head. I don't know. It happens a lot, doesn't it? Doesn't it happen a lot? I'm still scrolling. Can you tell? I shouldn't tell you this. I'm telling you all the tricks of the trade here. Yeah, by the way, Tim Kaine, your new VP, stepped down as the DNC chair because he was the DNC chair last election. Not this one, the last one. That's when Hillary went to him and said, hey, let's put Wasserman Schultz in there. She's going to guarantee me the win. And when I get the nomination, you're my boy. And it's played out exactly like that. And there are no coincidences in politics. None. None at all. Yeah, I don't know. I don't get frustrated, and because when you know, it's like the song I play, like the movie that I'm a fond of. Once you see the Matrix for what it is, and you see that the people you think are in charge aren't, they're not. They're not in charge. They don't have the sway. They don't have multi billions of dollars and $1 trillion wealth. You know, when you hear the Rothschild family mentioned, and you hear all the other. You know, that's real power. That's real power. So in 2002, we invade Afghanistan. Then we invade Iraq. And oh, yeah, those wars are over. No, they're not. Maybe officially on paper they are. You want to check out some of the profits that have been made by our military-industrial complex? That Roosevelt, Eisenhower warned us about? In the late 50s, essentially during World War II, we built up this massive military to defeat Germany, by the way. Most of those countries that fought in that war got their money from the same families on both sides of a war because you loan money, right? You get it back with interest, and plus you sell them a bunch of weapons. Let's call this the top 10 asinine companies who profit from death countdown. And I'm Casey Kasem, and we're counting them down. Oshkosh. No, folks, that's not suspenders for your little kid. They made $18 billion since 2006. GE, we bring lots of death to life. At number 9, $19.8 billion, so just shy of $20 billion in profits. For General Electric. McDonnell Douglas, which makes all those cool jet fighters that us dudes, you know, that's I've said this many times, is I can be fascinated by the technology, but I don't have to be real gung-ho about what these machines are built to do. And they are built to rain death down on people. Let's face it. $24.7 billion in profits. Oh, yeah, we made a mistake going to Iraq. Mr. Bush, he was just incompetent. Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. Coming in at number 7, SAIC, whatever that stands for, SAC, as in big one, full of money, $25.8 billion in profits. BAE Systems, which ironically has a building not too far from where I'm currently working part-time. When I drive by them and I see, you know, you do. And there's actually another one on this countdown that, you know, one of their offices, one of their production facilities. I think what they do there is I think they make the chip that helps cruise missiles find their targets. I could be wrong about that, but BAE, $42.4 billion in profits. General Dynamics, we've heard that name a lot. They're at number five, $47.8 billion. Raytheon. Mm-hmm. You know what? One of the companies that made about $38 billion is not a defense contractor, but they used to be run by Dick Cheney. So technically, they don't make bombs or helicopters or cruise missiles or destroyers or aircraft carriers or whatever they make. But, you know, Halliburton made $38 billion. Raytheon, $57.1 billion in profits. Northrop Grumman. Now, you know, General Dynamics makes fighter jets. Grumman makes fighter jets. Actually, the next two, number two and number one do as well. Northrop Grumman, $68.8 billion. Remember, this is since 2006. So that's over the last 10 years. That doesn't cover from 2001 to 2006. Boeing, who of course they make passenger jets, but they also make a whole bunch of airplanes used for everything from refueling to some of the big AWACS planes, some of those bigger, because we live not too far from MacDill Air Force Base. And you can see the AWACS taking off and the big C-130s and all those. Boeing, wow, what a jump. Grumman made $68.8 million. Boeing at number two, $121 billion in profits in 10 years. Okay, that's $12 billion a year in profits with a B. That's what war does. And Lockheed Martin, which makes all kinds of things. You name it, man. Mostly, you know, airplanes and fighter jets and almost every probably radar system that's on every destroyer or aircraft carrier. $161 billion in profits. None of what's happened in the last 15 years is an accident or a mistake. This has all been planned, and it's been planned a very long time. Let that sink in. What's happening with WikiLeaks? I don't know how long Assange, I'm sure he's got a good chain of command. I'm sure he's not the only one over there with a conscience. This guy's obviously been framed for some type of sexual assault. So he's hiding out. Well, that's what they'll do. You know, when you go after them, they're gonna turn the hounds on you. He's got to be pissing Hillary off big time. He's got to be. He's got to be like, you know, it's like spin the big wheel on Price is Right. You know, tick, 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 tick. Okay, we're going to release the, they probably have like a little fun wheel. Or maybe they play Plinko, like at the bottom. One says the DNC emails. One says Hillary's deleted Syria emails, which is the ones they just released. You know, imagine the frustration of people that think they're in power. That's what I love about the internet. It is leveling the playing field of people who dictate the world to the rest of the world. Election Justice USA. They did a study. They found out that without any election fraud, Sanders would have won by a landslide. They don't want Bernie Sanders. Now, don't get me wrong. Socialism. Okay. Some of his ideas were not too far-fetched if you were just going to say, you know, pay off college or do some things or, or medical care for everybody. All you got to do is shrink the military budget, shrink the military-industrial complex, which is, I think, getting over $680 billion a year now. And a lot of those companies I just mentioned are the ones that get paid off. But Sanders wasn't exactly anti-war. He's not like Jill Stein, and he's not like Gary Johnson. He did vote. He didn't vote. You know, he voted no for most of these wars. But when push comes to shove, if anybody said, you know, shouldn't we end all these wars? He didn't say that. No, he'd always come with, you know, America's interests. When anytime you hear the phrase America's interests abroad, you know what that means? Oil. It means oil. It means gas. It means minerals like titanium. Let's get the other general whose conscience finally kicked in here. See if we can get him. Let me find him here. And you know what? You know when he decided to speak out was after, geez, they went after his emails and he was forced to resign. Petraeus.
If Afghanistan can become the Central Asian roundabout, to use President Karzai's term, to where it can be the new Silk Road, think of the implications for that. Recalling that, of course, Afghanistan is blessed with the presence of what are trillions, with an S on the end, trillions of dollars worth of minerals, if and only if you can get the extractive technology, the human capital operated.
See, if we were actually going to go there with treaties and say, listen, we're going to come in, we're going to bring you all the machinery needed to extract these. We're going to want these, but we're going to pay you a very good rate for this money, for these minerals. Because face it, this brand new phone that I got the other day, that battery, what kind of batteries are they? Class? Titanium ledge? Where do we get the titanium? We steal it from the Afghans. Instead of doing things right, treaties and agreements, and I know the T word, and you talk to a Native American about a treaty, and they're going to laugh right in your face and go, oh, yeah, they'll honor that shit. They got a great, great record at honoring that. Can I get a Ric Flair? We're almost ready to go to break here. I am going to do some Doug Stanhope. Yeah, I want to play some Dougie. You know me and Big Pharma, and you know me and cannabis. As a matter of fact, I'm going to play, you know what? Here's what I'm going to do. We're going to play a small piece of audio here. I think it's about 3.5-4 minutes, not even. And the reason I want you to hear it, hang on a second. People post stuff on my page, and I love it. Don't get me wrong. It's great. I love the interaction, but every time I scroll down and I want to find something I've posted, I can't find it because there's 7 more things on my page. I know I can vary it. I know I can lock that shit out. I don't need to do that. And by the way, I haven't had to block anybody or get rid of anybody on Facebook or Twitter in a while. I say it all the time. You can disagree with me all you want. You'll argue with me all you want. But the moment you get personal about me or my life, you want to go there? All I do is hit that little delete button, and you drift off to Never Never Land. Never to be heard from again. And you don't even get to see what I'm up to. I give you the double tall boys and go, fuck you. But for the most part, I keep an open mind to what everybody wants to say. And I will notice this on both sides. A lot of people are embarrassed. The people that would call themselves a liberal or progressive, they're pretty embarrassed by their party. And the people on the right are almost dead silent now because of Drumpf. Yeah, here's a 3-minute video. This is a great interview, and let me set this up. I'll basically just say the same thing that that little paragraph that I posted on my Facebook page says the same thing. Part of my frustration with how cannabis became illegal, you know, about 100 years ago was because of the hemp plant. It was going to challenge cotton, petrochemicals. It was going to challenge paper industry. It was going to challenge protein industries, because, you know, like soy and cattle and beef, it literally is a miracle plant, and it was going to challenge all of them. Well, they found a way to slowly make it illegal by going after its cousin, cannabis, because of THC. And we all know that history by now if you listen to the show. But part of that the frustration is, if that never took place, the world would be different. And we would know so much about the compounds inside of cannabis that it would have already been synthesized into many medicines. And remember, people are fighting cancer by just putting a dab of oil under their tongue. But think about if we actually had it legal for the last, let's say, 20 years or 30 years. Think of how much we'd know. Think of how it would be a specialized pill. Oh, you have insomnia. This is directly specific strains. And this guy who's going to talk to you here in a second, he knows way more about a plant than I'll ever know. But he does a pretty good job of breaking down why it's so important to know this plant all the way down at the molecular level. And that's what I'm pissed about. My sister died of cancer about 4 years ago. Who knows? Maybe we should still be alive today. Maybe you lost somebody to cancer 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. Maybe if that, instead of chemo and chemicals and radiation and billion-dollar cancer treatment industry, we'd have cures. Cures. Now, we have testimony from many people who have cancer in remission because of cannabis. But it's still not a specialized medicine. And it could have been. And that's why I'm frustrated. And that's why I get a fire under my ass and go, man, it's not just about the socialization and the being able to use it the same way you would use alcohol or anything else. Of course, I'm for that. I do. I use it. But I'm also using, and I've used it many times for anxiety. I've used it to relax on the air. It has helped my career. It has helped everything from my sex life to my sleeping. And that's just weed. It's not like it's been synthesized and they look at it like this guy's going to tell you. He's a little brainy, but he's cool. And we're going to play him directly into Doug Stanhope because it's a perfect setup for his bit. And we'll do one unsigned band and we'll be back to finish up the show and we'll do some more topics. But check this guy out. This is great stuff.
Out of the dark ages, the reality is the kinds of information that was available both to patients and consumers was very limited. The speculation about which compounds were in the plants were only speculation. My name is Jeremy Plum, and I'm a co-founder of Pharma. This is the very first effort I'm aware of to use science in a profound way to describe the different kinds of cannabis. One of the things that's been widely misunderstood about cannabis is that there's a defining baseline called a strain. And in fact, what it turns out is even if you have the same genotype, which is the DNA for a particular plant, there's another variable that's even more important, and that has to do with the phenotype. It's that the environment that the cannabis is grown in is tremendously influential in the kinds of compounds the cannabis produces. And as a grower for more than 25 years with a lot of lab results under my belt, I understand now that lighting intensity, light spectrum, fertilizers, relative humidity levels, all of these variables will determine which drugs are being made in the plant. But lastly, the chemotypic diversity is actually what matters to patients and consumers. You want to know which drugs are in this batch, in this plant. It's not in this strain, it's in this batch. Because even if you have the same strain, the same genotype, you're still going to see a significant diversity of compounds.
We have clients such as Pharma that are interested in other types of testing, and I generally refer to this as value-added information. So what they're interested in generally is what we refer to as chemotyping, which is basically a measure of the sort of the primary chemical constituents of the cannabis product. Well, this will be very similar to what we do with wine right now. You know, we have Malbecs and we have Cabernets and we have Pinots, and as consumers we know, we can taste them and we see that, you know, we know that they're different types of wines, and we will select a given wine to match whatever our mood is for that particular time. And I think a lot of people would, you know, I think there's a lot of reason to believe we can do the same thing with cannabis.
Pharma was the first dispensary in the world to begin to curate with the consistent lab results approach that we've taken and measuring terpenes and putting the overall terpene value on the shelf. Terpenes are the aromatic compounds in cannabis that we also know have therapeutic effects and affect the altered states. Also, we put on the shelf a color spectrum, and we indicated 3 positions for red and 3 positions for blue. These are meant to correlate with either a relaxing and calming state in the blue or a focusing and euphoriant effect with the red. One of the big changes that's coming down the pipe is the distinction between artisanally produced cannabis and commodity cannabis. In Oregon, you have a devotion to craft and artisanal production, and I believe that that distinction will start to become more and more clear in the market. I think that cannabis will really change forms and not be relegated to a small subculture in a kind of prohibition era, and that's the transition happening over the next 5 years that I'm most excited about.
Nighttime, out on the ledge.
So let's have a little bit of this. I get the big Bob Marley joint. Look at this. Here, try this.
Ledger.
That's what you are. You are the motherfucking Antichrist.
DC, dangerous conversation.
I tried every fucking thing I could fucking think of to mold him into a proper kind of DJ.
Ledgy poo.
That's why I love hearing people go, oh, that town, that's like 20 years behind the times, that fucking place. Book me there. I had fun 20 years ago. But I can still smoke indoors? Oh, I got ecstasy still pure, uncut, and readily available? Oh, shit. What cavemen they must be. The only drugs that are even popular anymore, all the dummy drugs, all the drugs that make you more boring, all the mood stabilizer, antidepressant. Everyone's got some mental disorder they've been diagnosed with, and they take a fucking pill. They push them on me all the time. I ruin so many relationships because I fucking think all the time. Sorry. Oh, geez. You think it's ADD. No, it's not ADD. I'm thinking. I'm thinking about a lot of stuff. It's not ADD. Yeah, I stutter a lot and I fuck stuff up, but that's because I'm always thinking, well, you're not listening to me because I'm thinking about something that's more interesting than you. I'm trying to build a perfect utopian society in my head. And what are you talking to me about? Bowling or what? I have a head that just won't shut the fuck up. Where do the ideas come from? Do you have a head like that? Do you have the brain that just won't shut the fuck up all the time? You learn to work with it. Did you ever try to do this? I tried this in July in Tucson, Arizona, and failed miserably. Did you ever try to sleep sober? Completely impossible. I tried. I got a meeting at 6:30 in the morning. I got a flight to LA for a meeting, so I'm trying to be responsible. And I'm just laying there in a hotel. No people or conversation, no distractions, sober, and no television, just your head on a pillow. 1 a.m., 2 a.m. You mother. Because that's when the carnival kicks into high gear. You're almost 40 years old, you fucking loser. How long are you going to do that? How long are you just going to get drunk and amuse shitheads for a living? Well, there must be something that rhymes with orange, lorange, smarange, orange. There's fucking music is playing in there and it always sucks. We didn't start the fire. Shut the fuck up! I'm going to go to bed. 3 more hours. I'm going to sleep. And my ex-wife is in there. You never took me to the botanical garden. It was always about you. You fucking megalomaniac. You never cared. I was dying of loneliness. It was always better since the world was turned. Shut the fuck up! You're going to sleep. I ain't not taking fucking medication for it. That's also where the ideas come from. I'll just pour some alcohol on that when it happens and try to even it out. You work with your problems. Fucking everyone's taking pills just because they're afraid of standing out. Or I was terrified when my doctor told me that I had a unique and interesting personality trait. But then he told me about new Zoloft, the Prozac, and I just take 3 pills a day and I blend into this fucking horrible inbred corporate landscape, and I don't care. They'll legalize any drug so long as that drug keeps you producing. That's all I give a shit about is production. You're kicking out enough boxes at the plant? Well, go. It's whatever keeps you doing that. Keeps you vaguely content sitting in a cubicle. Go ahead, FDA approved. I have a job where I alphabetize insurance forms 45 hours a week, and I noticed I couldn't concentrate so well on my job, so my doctor put me on Adderall, and now I can just breeze through my workday. I don't even notice that my empty life is being pissed away underneath fluorescent tubes. I have no highs or lows. I have no good stories. But I'm getting a lot of stuff done. I'm probably the most boring person I know, but look at me produce. I just go A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, blah, 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 blah. You're never going to take a pill for that. You're not concentrating because that's fucking boring, and that's a natural reaction to boring. Don't concentrate. Find another way. You're going to make a living, get bills to pay, buy less shit, and find some fun. Suck a dick. You're going to pay bills, suck a dick. I'm talking to you in particular, because you're close. Whatever. Spin around the brass pole a few times. Whatever. Say you saw the Virgin Mary in a grilled cheese sandwich and sell that shit on eBay. There's a grift in the system. There's always a scam. You don't have to do it just because your guidance counselor told you you'd excel at it. Fuck them over. This country is so bereft of imagination anymore. So fucking those pills probably have a lot to do with it.
I was a real slut when I was a younger girl. I slept with a lot of guys. And it's not something that I'm proud of. But I'm in therapy now, and my therapist put me on Wellbutrin and Effexor, and she explained to me through our sessions, the reason I was so promiscuous, I come from a military family. So I didn't have a stable male role model in my life. I have a low self-esteem because I'm a little bit chunky, and I try to compensate for that by having sex with a lot of different men. Maybe you just like the cock. Is that possible? Is it possible that that's why you slept around? You like that fucking purple meat hammer that is wailing in and out of your fucking untrimmed, winter-ready New York sludge pot, and that's fantastic. Take some cock. There's nothing wrong with it. It's free fun. That's what it's there for. Jeez, don't take a pill. Take the cock. It's there for that. Maybe your clitoris is there for a reason. Huh. Clit's there to attract the fucking pork sausage.
Nighttime, out on the ledge.
You know what's frightening me is I'm starting to think
right
that you're not delusional.
You'll have every equal.
I'm sure you've had a dangerous conversation sometime in your lifetime.
It would help everything if you could just produce some form of identification.
We call it DC for short.
And if you'll excuse me, it's time to make the world safe for democracy.
Created to the ground.
Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger.
I mean, this is a gab fest. Yuck, 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 yuck.
Dangerous Conversation.
Hey, Old Man River, zip it or I'll break your hip.
Scott Ledger.
But I haven't tried my Wolfman Jack Lady shaver yet.
So by the time Eisenhower is president, there is a huge new flow of cash into defense industries.
He was the first to acknowledge that a permanent military establishment would be required during this period. But then unless we could find some kind of breakthrough, that in fact it would end up creating a terrible cost.
The cost of one modern heavy bomber is this: a modern brick school in more than 30 cities.
It is two electric power plants, each serving a town of 60,000 population. It is two fine, fully equipped hospitals.
We pay for a single fighter plane with 500,000 bushels of wheat.
We pay for a single destroyer with new homes that could have housed more than 8,000 people.
This is not a way of life at all, in any true sense. Under the cloud of threatening war, it is humanity hanging from a cross of iron.
My father, as president, had strong guiding principles. He used to say modern weapons take food from the hungry and shelter from the homeless. And so he was fighting with the Pentagon all the time for asking for too much and Congress for giving it to him.
I don't think we should pay 1 cent for defense more than we have to.
Well, Eisenhower saw us starting to build program after program that was just out of control. And his own ability to shape national security policy was being hemmed in by these forces he couldn't control, and he was the president.
On at least one occasion, Eisenhower was heard to say by those in the room, "God help this country when somebody sits at this desk who doesn't know as much about the military as I do."
My fellow Americans, this evening I come to you with a message of leave-taking and farewell, and to share a few final thoughts with you, my countrymen. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development. Yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
You have to realize this is one of the great presidents, great military leaders. On his way out the door, at the end of his second term, he says, by the way, watch out for the military-industrial complex.
People know that he invented the phrase military-industrial complex, but very rarely do you see the whole thing and realize how utterly strident his warning was. I think it's one of the most profound statements ever made by an American president.
We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
Here's Ledge.
Some of you know me as Mikey Gaga. Some of you know me as Joey Boombatz.
He's crazy, he's a fool, but he's not a liar.
This is not a conversation for children.
Look, I don't think you're crazy. I know you're not a terrorist. I know you're just an ordinary guy who's popped his top. But you must connect with those people out there.
Dangerous conversations.
Welcome back to Dangerous Conversations. Dangerous Conversation, right here at RadioInfluence.com, where you can hear us every Wednesday night, 8 Eastern. You can follow me on Twitter at Ledge DC Radio. Also, make sure you follow Radio Influence. And I'm not going to worry about the terrestrial stuff. I will let you know that, like I said a little earlier, there's a possibility. Hang on a second. There's a possibility of me getting back into radio full time, but it's going to have to be under mutual terms, of course. And part of that, of course, is that nobody messes with Dangerous Conversation. It ain't happening. It ain't happening because this is my favorite studio I've ever been in. I don't want to describe what I'm wearing, but let's just say I'm comfy. Hang on a second. Oh, that's awesome. Oh, this is where she stands up to her, the guy that wants to marry him, because he lied.
From this place, what had to be done and said here will matter.
Basically, he lied, he lied, he lied.
I'm certain of that.
Duncan, I promised you an answer. You've complimented me with your persistence and patience.
Yeah, some people call that stalker.
The decision I have come to is that I'd rather make the gravest of mistakes than to surrender my own judgment.
In other words, fuck off.
Please take this as my final answer. It must be no.
Plus Daniel Day-Lewis in the long hair, flowing robes. Very striking. I think it's an underrated movie. It's not underrated. A lot of people know about The Last of the Mohicans, but the cinematography, the storyline, this is no, there's no CGI, all these cannon battles and fort battles, this is real shit going on. They did use some modeling, but just the characters, the idea, you know, you have to remember this is before the Revolutionary War. I'm sorry, a little bit after. No, before. It's before the Revolutionary War took place. This is the French and Indian War. This is what's known as the French and Indian War. Great, great, great movie. If you haven't seen it, see it. The soundtrack alone is powerful. It's going to be one of my all-time favorite movies for a long, long time to come. Make that go away. We make this go away. This is what you do when you produce your own show by yourself. And here we are on the Twitter sphere. Captain Larry Martin, appreciate the follow. Some other people that are checking us out, appreciate the follows. Guys are cool. Yeah. Someone posted about an old station that I used to work for part-time. Sentimental and all. I did, you know, it's kind of funny because I talked about Eisenhower's warning, and then I, you know, as usual, you know, my ADD kicks in and I kind of just went to something else, but I found that piece during the Doug Stanhope. And I was like, yeah, there's that 3.5 minutes about Roosevelt. Eisenhower, damn it. About Eisenhower warning us about the military-industrial complex. Now, we've got more than that now. We have a police-industrial complex. You know, there are MRAPs, and, you know, these guys are carrying basically cannons now. I mean, there's a weapons industry within our country, not the war. Not the military. And we also have the prison industrial complex, which needs customers. They're all connected. And when you think about, I'm not going to say we're going to ever get to a utopia. I don't think that's possible. I think there's an awful lot of selfishness in the human species. I don't even know if male and female are not subspecies, kind of like cannabis and hemp are. I think we are women and men. Men are driven by the testosterone in their bloodstream. Women are driven by the estrogen in their bloodstream. So even though we're the same species, we're kind of subspecies. And I think that's what we are as a country. We've become whatever is profitable, we do. We're short-term. We're thinking we get paid now. There's a stock market. You don't want to invest in the stock and say, well, you know, you're going to have to wait 10 years for your payment because we're going to build education centers, and then we're going to get, you know, the drug war is going to end, and then there's going to be fewer drug crime in the streets. And then in 10 years, you'll see we don't do that. Native Americans would do it. They would say, listen, when they sit at their council fires, that's why I love this movie I'm watching right now. They would talk about where they were versus where they're going to be in two generations. They would think ahead. We don't do that, especially in this country. We are self-gratifying, upright-walking, skeleton, meat-layered, do it now, I want it now, I want everything now. I don't want to think about what my children or my grandchildren will have to go through. And that's a general speech. Not everybody thinks that way, but for the most part, that's really what our country's like. So we're making profit off of putting people in prison. You can invest in companies that build prisons. They need customers. Therefore, you need a drug war. They're all interconnected. And the same thing, every time a new piece of shit airplane comes off the assembly line like the F-35, which people are estimating by the time it's done being manufactured and the asinine attempts at maintaining this big old albatross of an airplane, $1.5 trillion. You want to talk about, you know, because if you listen to that Eisenhower, he's talking about building schools instead of a battleship. Those are 1959 references. $1.5 trillion on an airplane that can't fly in the rain, can't fly near lightning, can't bring close ground support to troops, is a one engine, not two. So if you lose one engine, you're going down. Its wings aren't big enough to dogfight. It can't grab enough air. I mean, it sucks a lot of different ways. But the Pentagon will shove money at it. Remember the Bradley fighting vehicle? You know, there was a movie made about that. I think it was an HBO movie. That was another turkey. It was supposed to be a troop mover that was kind of like a tank, but it just sucked. It kept failing. And there's a movie made about it, how they kept trying to sell it. And they did. And people, and your tax dollars pay for all of this shit. Instead of, new tidal currents that generate electricity. Obviously, we're seeing wind power. I'm happy about that. Solar power is doing well. By the way, side story I'll get to in a sec, but just I'll remind myself to tell you about I am finally getting my feet wet in the solar industry. About fucking time, huh? Yeah, if we could take the money we're wasting, you wouldn't need socialism. You would just change the distribution of the budget. Now, I know a lot of people that are libertarian, you're anti-tax. Listen, that is your pipe dream. If we achieve that someday, yay. But I don't see it. I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying, unless you get to a flat tax, unless you abolish the IRS, hell, let's go all the way to the Fed and get rid of them and manufacture our own currency and so on and so on and so forth. Okay, all of that, yes, I want it. But is it possible? Whoa, you want to talk about really upsetting the apple cart? I'm not sure if that'll happen. So what we can do is think, just take $1.5 trillion that's being wasted on one airplane. You know, each one of those things costs over $1.5 billion. One airplane. Imagine what you could do to that in your town. New roads, new bridges, new jobs, new infrastructure. Can you grasp that there's plenty of money to go around? We're just in the same cycle we've been in since the late 50s. We used to have a war take place and then build all the weapons for that war. Now we build all the weapons and manufacture the wars. And that's what the Middle East is all about. It's about resource wars. It's about getting their shit. It's about creating chaos. And it's about selling weapons. Every time you launch a cruise missile, $1 million, $2 million, and it blows something up and people up, you need another missile. Is that the best we can do as a species? Is that the best? Is that our plateau? I hope not. I don't think so. I don't. I think we're a species with a lot of potential, but we're just, and that's my frustration. It's always my frustration. I talk about it all the time. We're capable of so much more. And there's good news. There's lots of good news. There's new energy sources being tapped. There's, you know, lots of different ways, you know, just the cannabis hemp issue alone will help change things. No, it's not going to change everything. But when you get to food and fuels and fibers, you're basically talking about three things humans need to survive. And if it can grow out of the goddamn ground, why aren't we? Oh, yeah. Well, it's going to mess with Saudi Arabia. It's going to mess with the fracking industry. It's going to mess with me. Fuck them. And if they lose a job, some guy loses a job in a coal mine, good. Go install some solar panels and live longer, by the way. Stop crying to me about your world changing, because the world's changing for the better. And I know, if you work at a... I hear from people on social media, hey, you know, I've been working for the oil industry, and if it wasn't for us, you'd be in the dark. You wouldn't be able to broadcast. You know what? Google algae fuels, bitch. And get back to me. And tell me we don't have to mess up our coastlines. We don't have to kill all the microbiology and then just wreak havoc in the food chain like we're doing. We don't have to do it. Oh, we need to defend our company, our country. From who? China's not going to attack us. They're our biggest customer. The Russians? I don't think so. The whole idea of World War III is going to take place. Really? And what's the aftermath going to look like? Who wins? Nobody wins. So the threat of all this sells all those weapons. Oh, we have to build our military up. Why? Seriously, tell me why. And show me some facts to back it up rather than your paranoid fear that you get out of your fucking television every night. It's bullshit. It's been bullshit since the late 50s. The Red Scare was bullshit. People from Russia, after the wall crumbled, came out and said, we were never going to attack you. We were told the same thing. We were told to fear you. Now they want chocolates and blue jeans. Go figure. But it sold a lot of weapons, didn't it? Star Wars in the 80s, remember? Weapons systems, weapons, 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 weapons. For what? Half the weapons we have built, we are now old and rusty, and we sell them to third world countries. They have like our 1970s and 1980s destroyers and old battleships and shit. And they have them now. The small little country. Yeah, some little dictators. Hey, I got 100 tanks. Yeah, I know they're from 1985, but... It's got to end. If the world is going to take that quantum leap, you know, to the Jetsons, to a place where we are going to see a lot more of our honest to goodness potential, we have to stop wasting our resources on war. Period. Stop being afraid. And that's another thing. Oh, well, we had to fear the communists. Well, once they went away, we had to fear Al-Qaeda. Once that whole concept started, you know, they do media test people. The people at the top of the food chain say like, oh, so they're not afraid of Al-Qaeda anymore. Okay. Here's an idea. ISIS. And that's the new boogeyman. By the way, ISIS sells oil that they've stolen. You could stop that on an oil stock exchange in a day. They wouldn't be able to sell anything to anybody. They're driving around in new Toyota trucks. Don't know where they got those. You could probably halt those sales. It's the boogeyman that needs to be manufactured so you fear them, so it justifies the war machine and what is almost 50% of our GNP. Machines designed to kill others. Seriously, think about that. Instead of prosperity, instead of third world countries getting water machines and wind machines. You know, we could be building with our hands in factories things that don't kill people, that actually help people. But no, the fear machine just keeps going. Oh, we got to fear them Muslims now. I see it all over my social media. It's the new phobia. It's the new fear. Fear, fear, fear. Man, it sells. Doesn't the fear just sell? Isn't that a Megadeth album title? I think it is. I really do. I knew I had a rant in me. I think the bottom line here is, like I said at the beginning of this show, is we are now learning that we have nothing to fear, except, of course, like they say, fear itself. Because there's no way you can have a World War III. Not what everyone's afraid of. It would be disastrous for all the parties involved. But it is the only way to keep just enough fear teetering in your world, in your head, on your television, on the front of your newspaper every single day and week and month and year, so you're okay with our government spending most of your money that you send them for war. Ooh, gotta be afraid. Gotta be afraid. That boogeyman's going to get you. That boogeyman's going to get you. And it's just this endless cycle of idiocy. It is idiocracy. And people that want to talk about it can't even get to the elections or get into the elections because the debate process and the election process is so micro-controlled now that Gary Johnson or Jill Stein, can you imagine four people at four podiums and two of them going, end the wars, and here's why, and here's what we can do with the money, and they're not going to be on that stage because the machine that is the corporatocracy doesn't want peace. It's Orwell. It's 1984. Permanent war. It's been going on for almost 15 years in now 5 to 7 countries. Are you cool with that? Because if you are, you're listening to the wrong fucking podcast. Just don't even come back here. But if you're angry enough to learn the truth, learn the information, find that Wesley Clark 2 minutes of... every time I send that to people, go, oh, well, he's been discredited. No, he hasn't. He's just told you that all of this was planned. And they needed a Pearl Harbor. Because most people were tired of war and didn't want it anymore. Especially once the Soviet Union disappeared in the late 80s, early 90s. We didn't have them as the boogeyman anymore to build up more and more ships and planes and bombs. We needed a new one. So we poked the bear, not the bear because that's a Russian symbol. We poked the camel. And we drop bombs in one country, and then another, and then another, and another, and another, and another, and another. And now we're like, what are we going to do with all the refugees? Here's an idea. Stop dropping fucking bombs on them so they can go home. Drone strike 2 weeks ago killed about 150 innocent people in Syria. It never made it on the mainstream news. The pictures are as horrific as you can imagine. People holding children, all of them dead, covered in blood, minding their own business because a drone at 17,000 feet and some guy with a joystick in Arizona thought they were a bad guy. And now, if you take, let's say, 150 people, and let's say each one of them had 10 family members, that's 1,500. You've got 1,500 new potential pissed off potential terrorists. Real ones. Real ones. You want to create chaos? That's how you do it. Every once in a while, bomb a hospital and go, oops, sorry, didn't mean it. You know, it's war. The State Department is looking into it. Oh, good. That'll make it all better. It's a joke. I'm sorry. It's a joke over here. Over there, it's hell. And we're responsible. You, me, everybody in this country is responsible because we're not doing anything about it. Now, don't get me wrong. This election cycle should be addressing this, but we're talking about Trump silencing babies and Hillary's dresses. Instead of talking about it, it's 2016. If we're the empire that we could be, we could be in completely ambivalent and truly bring prosperity to the world, but it's not that. It's a small group, a small cabal of very powerful people. And they want what they want, and they're going to get it. And they use the United States as their muscle. They literally are a cabal. They are criminals. But if you're going to be the godfather, you got to have a Luca Brasi. You got to have someone who's going to snap your neck. Otherwise, you're not going to fear them. You're not going to do what they want you to do. That's what we are. That's what our military is to that corporatocracy, to those oligarchs who truly run the world. Oh, it's conspiracy theory. No, it isn't. There is a top of the food chain in all of nature. What makes you think that there is not one when it comes to the powerful? Your president is not the most powerful, the most powerful person and the leader of the free world. Bullshit. Absolute bullshit. There are no strings on me. Do I have that song? I feel like playing that. Don't worry. This isn't technically dead air. When you got to run your own show. Now I got to find it. I know it's Immortal Tech. Talk amongst yourselves. Can you do that? Cool. I'll just edit this out. Don't worry about it. I'm actually going to edit out the gap. There's going to be a gap while I search for it. And you're going to think I just found it like a second later. And that's actually going to be an edit. So I'm actually going to make an edit here. But I'm going to find it. So talk amongst yourselves. Now, you think I found it right away, but I didn't. I actually edited that. There are no strings on me. Immortal Tech, not only talented, not only outspoken, not only extremely smart and educated, will never get a national record deal. He knows it. He started selling CDs out of the back of his car. He makes about maybe 400 grand in a year. He sold 400,000 of his songs and or CDs compared to any one of the douchebags inside the recording industry that wants to write songs about rims and gold teeth all fucking day. And this guy knows it. This guy realizes that my free speech, his free speech in this song, and it, of course it uses something, a sample from Pinocchio. I'll be back in three.
Freedom of speech, motherfucker.
Okay.
Something for the kids. Step in the club smoothly with the L in my hand. Bitches know that I'm a freak like the Elephant Man. Intelligent plans, fuck a record deal. I want development land with my benevolent clan. And that's the reason that I only trust my fam. 40,000 records sold, 400 grand. Fuck a middleman, I won't pay anyone else. I'll bootleg it and sell it to the streets myself. I'd rather be that than signed and stuck on a shelf. And because of this, executives try to diss me. Racism frozen in time like Walt Disney. And now they say they want to get me signed to the major. If I switch up my politics and change my behavior, trying to tell me what the rhyme about over the beat. Bitch niggas that never spent a day in the street. But I repeat that, nobody can hold my reins. I put the truth on tracks, nigga, simple and plain.
I got no strings, so I have fun. I'm not tied up to anyone. Take that string, but you can see there are no strings on me.
I guess to America, I'm a disaster. Oh, no. A slave that was destined to own his masters. Independent in every single sense of the word. I say what I want, you fucking little sensitive herb. This is America. I thought we had freedom of speech, but now you want to try to control the way that I speak. And O'Reilly, you think you a patriot? Yeah, right. You ain't nothing but a motherfucking racist bitch. Full of hatred, pressing a button, trying to eject me. But I don't got no motherfucking deal with Pepsi. No corporate sponsor telling me what to do. Asking me to tone it down during an interview. Trying to minimize the issue, but I'm keeping it large. I love the place I live, but I hate the people in charge. Speaking is hard when you got strings attached. So I'ma say it for you, cause I don't got none of that. And if you didn't understand what I spit at your brain, hey yo son, let this little nigga explain. Come on, son, y'all niggas know the way that I do. ImmortalTechnique.com live for you. And I know sometimes it be making you nervous the way I smash puppet rappers that belong in a circus. You motherfuckers just can't compare. Looking for a fan base that's no longer there. I know that you're scared and you're hiding up in the cut. But this is freedom of speech, nigga, tell them what's up. Word, nigga, fuck John Ashcroft. Nigga, fuck Fox News. Fuck those snake-ass bitches trying to manipulate your opinion, telling you what to think. Word the fuck up, nigga. Like, we invading niggas because we want to free them. You racist motherfucker. You don't give a shit about those people. You can suck my dick. Relax, relax. Another rubbing joke at the bar, nigga. It's my day off. Word up.
See, that's what freedom of speech sounds like.
For the kids.
For the kids. All right, here's a slightly more... All right, you're good. Here's a slightly more toned down version of freedom of speech from someone who's running for president of the United States.
Marijuana, you know, is a drug which is dangerous because it's illegal. It's not inherently dangerous itself.
Dr. Jill Stein, running for president.
Can instruct the Drug Enforcement Agency to do a really radical thing. To use science in determining what substances are and are not going to be scheduled. Because if science was being used, then marijuana, cannabis, and hemp would be taken off of the list of scheduled substances in the blink of an eye.
Amen to that, sister.
I'm not great at substance use, I have to admit. I'm not fun at a party. More power to those who do.
I bet she is.
But I firmly believe this is not government's business. Marijuana is a wimp of a substance.
Call a cannabis girl.
To alcohol and tobacco. The most dangerous thing about it is the dangerous underground economy with all the violence that goes with us. The war on drugs is what is dangerous. That's what needs to end. That's what's made the United States number one in the world in incarceration. It's made us incarceration nation.
Yes, because there's money in prisons. There's no money in having drugs not be illegal. The police forces won't get any more money. Their budgets, see what I'm saying? If we change the way we think about things, the amount of money being, and I can't use the word wasted, because it's not wasted for people that are profiting on the other end. It's not a waste when a police force gets another 500 grand in their budget for the war on drugs. That's not a waste. That's paychecks. That's more equipment. That's more flash bombs and whatever they use to fuck up your life. It's not a waste. But if we stop what she's saying and we realize that we're doing it so ass backwards. You know, a couple hundred years from now, you and I will be gone. Our ancestors, if you procreate, will hopefully have procreated and then some of our genealogy will be passed along, but they're going to laugh at us. They're going to look at how America was from about World War II to now and who knows how much farther, and they're going to laugh at us. They're going to make fun of how stupid and dumbed down and pure idiocracy has taken place in this country. Now, if you're a parent and you got a 15-year-old and they're smoking weed and they're just smoking too much weed and they're, you know, the classes and their grades are dropped, you know, I understand those concerns, of course. I'm not saying, but, you know, they're going to smoke it either way. They're probably going to use artificial weed, which is killing people. They're probably going to drink, which is bad for you. That's, you know, that's the parenting challenge. I get that part. I get it. But if you look, at any country, okay, Portugal is obviously the biggest. They've decriminalized all drugs 15 years ago. Everything's down. Crime is down. Addiction is down. All of the fear that we are constantly berated with when it comes to the war on drugs essentially is about funding police, funding prisons, making profit. And think about the street crime and violence like in Chicago. Think about how much of that will disappear. I saw a meme this morning that said over $5 billion with a B was spent last year for legal cannabis, various states. Obviously, Colorado is not just medical, but it is recreational. $5 billion that didn't go to cartels. $5 billion that didn't go to weapons or street crime or young men and women dying. It is time to rethink. We are slowly doing that. And the reason I think my rants come out is because I can see the potential. It's like right in front. It's like when you're frustrated with your kid and you're like, man, if you just applied yourself, you could become that great baseball player, or you could become that better at math, or you could become a better dancer, whatever it is where you see the potential and they don't. And you just want it. You want to pat them on the back and you want to kick them in the butt at the same time. It's a beautiful thing to be able to see a future. And that's why I'm such an energy geek. And I'll bring up my solar thing in a second here. But that's really what it's about. It's not that you have to be all geeky about energy. You just have to realize that once your electric bill, once the cost per watt goes way down, that's more money in your pocket. You're going to spend that money in an economy. The economy is going to be better. You want to see the economy crash? Put gas at $5 a gallon and watch what happens. Boom. Overnight, layoffs. Okay? Energy is at the top of the pyramid. Food, of course, is energy for our bodies, so that it also counts. But energy, in other words, food is energy. Electricity is energy. Potable fuels like gasoline and diesel fuel, those are energies that we use to do everything from the grow the food, to transfer the food, to keep the food cold. If all of that becomes abundant, and I mean abundant, like everywhere it's inexpensive, you are going to have a planet Earth that is going to be almost utopian, because you'll still butt heads on ideas. And then you can start to work on religion, which is a clusterfuck among just all by itself. I'm not saying you shouldn't believe, you know, you listen to this show. I believe what you need to believe. I'm only concerned what it turns you into. Okay, if you want to be a Buddhist or a Taoist or a pantheist or a Christian or a Muslim or any one of those, I don't care who you pray to. I don't care what direction you face. I don't care what you wear around your neck. I care what it's turned you into. That's all I care about. Everything else, yeah, blah, blah, blah. It's the Jews. You know what? They're just, I'm not into tribal thinking. I don't care about your tribes. I don't care. I don't care about your nationality. I don't care about your religion. I don't care. Because you know what it does? It creates tribes, and tribes are separate from each other, creates more separation. Doesn't create unity, creates the opposite. So I care what it turns you into. But we'll get to religion in more shows, and you know we will. So that's why I'm such, people say, why do you always talk about energy? You know, why don't you talk about, you know, and we, if you notice, you've been listening to the podcast, we haven't even done sex yet. Because I've got a great sexologist and you know, there's a lot of topics, but everybody's talking about that. I don't know how many different podcasts and broadcasts where everybody's going in the crotch every 5 seconds. Guess what? challenge yourself, learn something else. And I will. But my palate for this show isn't just about you getting off and getting high. Though it's fun. I'm not against it. Wait. Again, many bells. I'm all for that. But if we're going to turn things around, it starts with energy. So I got a text the other day. Everybody that knows me from the Radio IO days knows that I used to call him Super Rick. Rick Jemanski, who I'm actually going to his wedding. I'm going to get that RSVP back. Sent me a text saying, hey, there's a guy looking for some salespeople for solar energy. So I make the phone call, get the resume out, and now my foot's in the door. And I'll be going to training and shadowing. And I want to make sure I walk the walk, too, because, you know, talking about changing the world is all great, but Gandhi always said, be the change you want to see in the world. In other words, what? What does it turn you into? What do you amplify? And that's me and solar energy. My trifecta is broadcasting fun and knowledge. Okay, we got that going. Now we're working on solar energy. That's the second one. Miss small paycheck, big paycheck, you know, 5 or 6 years down the road, maybe I'm helping large installations. And I'm standing there with a little construction hat on, talking to some people that are building a big building, and it's going to be completely neutral carbon. And I don't mean that in the that political volleyball that goes back and forth about global climate change and all that. I'm just talking about there are terawatts of energy falling from the sun every day. I want to be part of it. So that's coming. And of course, the third part of my trifecta is being involved in the cannabis industry, which I will sooner or later. November, vote yes on two if you live in Florida. And we'll see $5 billion. $5 billion. You know what? We have 20 million people in the state of Florida. You want to see a big industry just take off? That means growers, sellers, transporters. Remember, there are so many different, I mean, everything from pipes to bongs to storage, Tupperware. I mean, you have to remember that, and let's not even talk about hemp. You know, Kentucky and Tennessee are starting to grow hemp. Colorado's growing hemp. That's a beautiful thing. And that's going to mean more food and more fuels and more fibers and construction materials and right on down the line. So I want to be part. I want to be part of the conversation, which is what we're doing here at DC and my terrestrial gigs and all that, as well as hopefully get my foot in the door when it comes to photovoltaics and solar energy and the Sunshine State living up to its name. Talk about getting up every day and loving what you do. That's my goal. It's always been my goal. And, of course, after November, when medical cannabis is allowed in the state and we start to break down the stereotypes and the fear behind that, we start to educate the elderly and they can come off of opiates. You know, two of the reasons I'm very passionate about this, one is my sister Susan, who died of cancer. It's been almost 4 years now. And I said that not too long ago on the show, what if? But also, one of my best friends in the world, Richard, lost his daughter to partying with opiates. Accidental overdose. She died in her sleep at 21 years old. So my motivations are partly personal, partly professional, partly spiritual. And that's why I do the show. That's why I've always done the show. It's because, you know, F-bombs aside, do you think right now on any terrestrial transmitter, I would be allowed to bring this type of content? I'm going to say probably not. Watch a golf tournament, watch a football game on a Sunday, and every other commercial is about a pill or a vaccine. I'm going to go see Vaxxed. I think it's next Monday night. I'm going to go see it here in town. See what that movie's all about. Once, you know, the till's up and I can take this, what is a fixed studio, and transform it into a portable studio, I can't wait to get on the road and do, I think I mentioned this earlier, I'm not sure if it's going to be called the deceive fireside chats. We're going to wait for the weather to cool off a little, of course. But my goal is to once a month be sitting around with maybe some of the old crew, you know, like Ferris and Dave and who knows who else. And maybe we're sitting around a nice fire pit and we're having a few cold ones and we're vaping or we're hitting our pipe and we're talking about a lot of subjects and laughing and having a great time. Dangerous Conversation is my baby. It came to me. I think part of the reason it came to me was because in 2004, I decided to speak out. And I think there was a quantum shift in my world, in my life, in my consciousness. And it's not showed up as quickly as I'd wanted it to. There has been some struggle. There has been crashing on a couch or two. It's not been an easy ride, but compared to a third world person who walks 10 miles to grab 4 gallons of water, I'm not going to complain. But I do know this. I am very, very proud of its content. I always have been. When you get a chance to play Immortal Technique, it's a great song. The song cracks me up. In Rebel Inc. earlier, and get to them in a second. I'm going to try to get a little bit of a wave going with the Prophets of Rage. I'll get to you that in a second here. But this show and, you know, people like Cynthia that helped me book guests and the one-on-one interviews with guys like Brad Friedman and Lee Camp and Abby Martin and, those type of people that are out doing the same thing. They're doing media on their own. Look at Lee. He's on RT America every Friday night. It's happening. Changes are taking place. They're not happening as fast as I want, and I'm sure they're not happening as fast as you want. But we are creating that change. Yeah, I think it was Hillary Clinton that said, you know, I'm not sure what her quote was, but it was something about alternative media or new media is either beating us to the punch or, you know, I can't remember. I'm paraphrasing, of course. But she was complaining about new media. She was complaining about it. Gee, I wonder why. Wiki, wiki, wiki. Shut up. You know. Rebel Inc. I have, I would say, a good 20 to 30 unsigned acts that I like. I listen to occasionally. Rebel Inc. was probably the first one I became very passionate about. I spoke with Adam Armstrong about 2 weeks ago. And I asked him, and I said, you know, Prophets of Rage, which is, of course, is, you know, Cypress Hill and Chuck D from Public Enemy and three members of Rage Against the Machine, they're now Prophets of Rage, and they're touring this fall. They're already, you know, they've produced some new music. If you look at their set list, it's maybe out of 12 songs, you'll probably get about 6 Rage tunes, a couple Cypress Hill, a couple of Public Enemies, and some new material, which is always great. Well, if they go up and down the East Coast, are they going to need an opening band? And why not Rebel Inc.? Well, when I spoke with Adam, he said, you know, we've been taking a lot of time off. You know, we don't even technically have a bass player or drummer. You know, that kind of thing can be fixed. Kevin and Adam, which is the real creative force behind that band, have been camping and doing other things. And I was very happy for him. Because we had conversations, you know, if you listen to the song Burn, which is a great song, but it's not exactly how I want to remedy the problems in the world. I don't want violent revolution. I don't want violence, period. So he said he's finding his zen, and Kevin is too. And I was like, good, you know, because these guys came out pissed off. Their songs are about pissed off, but they're still a great band. And when Adam's a great front man and Kevin's a great guitarist, I'm not sure how they could put that band back together. But I'd like to encourage you guys to follow them, Rebel Inc., at Rebel Inc. And I'd also, let me see if I can bring my Twitter up here real quick. I think Prophets PH. Prophets of Rage, where are you? Come on. Come on. It might be under something different. I'll tell you what, I'll put it up on social media. I'll put both. I'll put one up on my Twitter, one up on my Facebook. I actually already started this Now, I don't want to say subtly. I want to say with all respect, find prophets of rage in social media. And if you are a fan of Rebel Inc. and you're a fan of this show, just suggest them. Say, listen, guys, I am another fan of Rebel Inc. and I would really like to see this band just open maybe one or two shows. They're, you know, that band's based out of Baltimore. I looked at the dates that Prophets of Rage is on the East Coast. It could coincide perfectly. And wouldn't it be cool to get one of our favorite bands, the Dangerous Conversations favorite bands, to open for those legends from those three great acts of Cypress Hill and Rage Against the Machine and Chuck D and Public Enemy? I mean, it would be pretty gratifying and satisfying all at the same time. So I want to encourage you to do that. Find them. Just, you know, type one little, you know, two lines on Twitter. Hey, guys, you've probably heard about Rebel Inc. I think they'd be a great opening act. Thanks, you know, whoever you are. And, you know, don't do it every day. Don't become a pest. That's my point here. Don't become a pest. I don't want that. I want to use our, we have a small, loyal audience. Okay, we're averaging about 4,500 downloads a show. So that's pretty good. You know, for a show, I'm a one-man band here in my home studio in my house. And, you know, we started with less than 1,800 people when we started. And now we're pushing 15,000. And that's good. I'm not even near the kind of numbers I could get a few advertising dollars. But we are growing. And I would rather, even if I never make a dime on this, I know the guys at Radio Influence don't want me to say that, but I would rather have a small, educated, loyal audience of people that are motivated and educated to help create positive change on the planet. Whatever your passion is, whether it's gardening, growing your own food, there's a lot of people are doing their own thing. It's really cool to see. But we can do better, and it can happen sooner. It's just a matter of time. So find Prophets of Rage, whether on Facebook or anywhere, or email them or whatever. And just drop them, you know, two lines. Hey, you know, I'm a fan of Dangerous Conversation. You know, they, you don't have to mention my show. Just say, Rebel Inc.'s one of the best live acts I've ever seen. It would be so cool to see them open for you. Bam. Done. And that would be a good thing. Don't you think? I think it's a great idea. I'm not holding my breath on it. But, you know, it might be pretty damn cool, you know, if it happens. Thanks for letting me rant on the internet. I love the communication. And I always get some good emails, and I always get some good Twitter messages, and people go, oh, this was a good show, or I recommended this to my brother. I had one from Maja the other day on Twitter. It was the one I got pretty emotional. I played the Gandhi stuff and the MLK stuff, and it was right after more shootings. And if you go back and listen to that show, you'll hear me get pretty emotional. I can do that. And she literally said she cried a couple of times, and I was like, bingo. That's one of my hopes, that I can not just prod you to think, but motivate you to feel. You do both of those, things are going to get better. You guys are great. I will talk to you next Wednesday. You have a great week. Thanks for listening to DC.
This is Vincent Hill. You've seen me on CNN, HLN with Nancy Grace, Al Jazeera, and True Crime with Aphrodite Jones, just to name a few. Now I've got my own show on Radio Influence, and I'll be taking you beyond the badge. I'll take you behind the scenes and into the minds of those following and investigating America's top news stories. Beyond the Badge with me, Vincent Hill, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and the Radio Influence family. Let's enjoy this ride as I take you beyond the badge.